Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. It's another. Don't you ever touch me, Jesse Gomez. If I say want to say yes, I'll say yes.
Yeah,
it's another IGN UK podcast with me, Simon Cardi, the rude Jesse Gomez.
That's not true.
And the very pleasant Emma Matthews.
Aw.
Hello.
There we go. Emma doesn't judge me like some people here.
I don't judge you.
I think you do with every look, with every blink you take. You do. What are we going to talk about this week? Talk about that Xbox Developer Direct. Talk about some games from that. Talk about, I've played a bit of Foam Stars. I'm going to talk a bit about that because I think it's actually quite good. And a couple of films that are finally coming out in the UK we'll talk about that have seemingly been out in America for like 2 months. Maybe I'm over-exaggerating, but who knows there. But first, there's only one place to start. Indiana Jones is back, baby.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, we got Indiana Jones last year. It just wasn't very good. So
I was going to say, I haven't touched that yet. Is it awful?
I didn't like it. I really didn't like it. And I was very much looking forward to it, and it just didn't work for me at all.
Is it just because he's old?
It's not just... I don't think it's Harrison Ford's fault. I think he's pretty good, to be fair. It's just not... It's just missing something. I don't know. I don't want to say it's just missing Spielberg, because... Spielberg did Kingdom of Crystal Skull, and that wasn't great either. But it's just, it's a bit too, I don't want to be like, oh, CGI is bad, because CGI can be very good and very useful. But in this, it didn't work for me. I actually thought the de-aging stuff they did at the start of that film was okay. It's just, you can still, you've got that fundamental problem, which they also had in The Irishman of like, it's still the old, you can tell it's an older version of the actor talking and moving, despite their face looking younger.
When like they're having that fight scene and it's just like
until it's like 8 year old De Niro. Phenomenal film though. But I didn't love Dial of Destiny, but Machine Games, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. I feel like my faith has been put back into Indiana Jones with this. This looked like pretty much if I close my eyes and imagine what I think this game would be and what I wanted it to be from that trailer. We pretty much got it. The thing that stood out to me most was there wasn't actually that much combat.
Yeah.
I was wondering, because Machine Games, especially recently, known for the Wolfenstein games, which are just like some of the best gunplay in recent first-person shooters, and they're all about just... You can play them stealthily, but they're mainly all about just getting the biggest guns you can and just murdering as many Nazis and robot dogs as you can in the space of a few hours. With great stories. They're not just mindless. There was a bit of whip combat, bit of shovel combat, bit of punching, but just I was just excited by the amount of actual like archaeology and puzzles it looks like you'll be doing, which is what I want to see, I think, from Indiana Jones. That's what I love, the charm of it and the adventure of it all. And they kept saying in that presentation the word adventure, and that's what keeps me excited, I think. What do you guys think?
I think, yeah, for sure. Like, I'm really glad with the, like, time period they picked as well, because I think, I know definitely for me, Raiders of the Lost Ark and Last Crusade are my favourite Indiana Jones films.
Oh, they're easily
films.
The best two.
And I think, yeah, a lot of people have the same opinion. And I think, like, that's the exact time period you want to be, like, sandwiched between those two. And yeah, like you said, the puzzles look really cool. Like, we've only seen a little bit of it, but if you sort of think, like, oh, what would an Indiana Jones game look like? This is exactly what I was hoping for from it. And so far, like, I think they announced it back in, like, 2021. It feels like it was ages ago. This is the first, like, proper look we've had at it, and I'm so excited. And it's coming out this year, which is really cool.
That is mad. I wasn't expecting that.
I hope it is. But yeah, I'm just... What do you think, Jesse?
I mean, I'm just... When I was watching through yesterday, it really, really reminded me of just one of my favorite games, the 360 era, which was just Chronicles of Riddick, Assault on Dark Athena. I feel like I've sort of missed a game which mixes first and third person action, which also incorporates stealth and just like a proper physical feeling game. And I know you had that with, because I think it was Starbreeze who made...
They made Butcher Bay. Did they make Dark Athena?
I think they did, but they also...
Yeah, I don't know.
But it was just a proper, like, you felt like that character in terms of how you were playing and just how physical it was and stuff. And you sort of get that with Indiana Jones, even when he's, you know, climbing up a wall using his whip. He's not, like, scurrying up there in, like, seconds. It's a proper physical thing that he's doing and just, it looks good.
That's what I love about the combat in the films as well. Like, he's not some sort of, like, super soldier. He's not even really, like, a trained soldier as such. He's, like... he's strong and he's smart, but like he's also clumsy and like there's like almost a slapstick approach to a lot of the fights he gets in. I hope we have some great chase sequences. We had some glimpses, some like plane chases at some point in that, and yeah, I'm just thinking about all the moments from like Raiders and Last Crusade and being like, if they translate that into a game, I mean, look, the comparisons are going to be made to Uncharted, but Uncharted is inspired heavily by Indiana Jones. It's like a cycle, right? And I feel like decisions go first person is smart, not only because that's Machine Games' kind of pedigree is first person games, but also it does help separate it from Indiana Jones, from Uncharted and Tomb Raider. Like, otherwise, you know, all the comments would be, oh, their Xbox are just doing Uncharted. It's like, oh, they're not really, are they?
But and you see those sort of staple, like, Machine Games sort of... set piece and stuff, because there's plenty of times in Wolfenstein where, you know, you're like leaping off a building or, you know, about to escape a vehicle that's about to blow up and you're on it and stuff like that. And you have that with, like, you know, the scene where Indy's like jumping off onto like a Japanese Zero fighter and stuff like that. Like, all those little bits, it just looks fun. I can't wait.
Yeah, it looks beautiful as well. And feel like, yeah, like you said, between Raiders and Last Crusade is the perfect time for this game. The Great Circle, still not 100% sold. It's a fantastic name for a game. We were joking earlier, like, is the Fantastic Triangle, you know, would that be good? Or
you could do so much, you know, with
Incredible
it.
Square.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like, it doesn't have that sort of pulpy feeling that you want. Like, the sort of, sounds silly to say, the Indiana Jones game I grew up with was The Emperor's Tomb. I mean, and that was...
Oh, mine was The Infernal Machine.
Yeah, but like that's in like those names at least sort of evoke, like, you know, you can imagine a scenario, but the Great Circle just sounds like he's going on a nice
explained
trip.
It. It's about this sort of like fictional circle around the globe that links these places together, basically. And I think it's a cool like narrative concept to get you going all around the world and not just, you know, in one, you know, the whole game in Egypt, for example, or something like that. You're going to visit lots of places. And Marcus Brody's back. I wasn't expecting that. I love Marcus Brody.
It was nice to see
little right turn there, but I just remembered Marcus Brody's back.
I'm really hoping by the end of the game we see some trippy shit, whether it's like aliens or like otherworldly stuff. That's what I want.
No,
they've done it in previous games where shit, like, just gets wild.
There will be a supernatural element. Like every Indiana Jones does have that.
Yeah.
But like Raiders is restrained, right? For 99% of that film, it's just a pulpy like action thriller. And then right at the end, you get the, oh my God, this thing is actually, you know, there is the power of God in this box. And, you know, you have an iconic moment. It's not just, oh my God, the hive minds of aliens are hidden in these pyramids.
I just want like a small segment of a level where something supernatural
will be
ridiculous
at the
happens.
End.
There like, will be, because it's Nazis again, isn't it? So
yeah, they love
and
it.
We love killing
they
them.
Love all that stuff. Yeah, they were interested in that stuff anyway. So
I mean, we could, I don't know, what would it be? Some sort of, maybe it's the circle translates into some sort of powerful ring that could rule them all or something. I don't know.
Lord of the Rings, sort of, great.
Yeah, who knows?
As long as it's not a circle, it's actually a spaceship, I think we're good.
I'm very glad they got the likeness of Harrison Ford, because he is Indiana Jones. Like, you know, James Bond has many different faces. He can be anyone. Indiana Jones is Harrison Ford. Like, there are the young Indiana Jones adventures where it's a different actor, but Harrison Ford, you close your eyes, you're seeing Harrison Ford. So I'm glad we've got his likeness.
I'm and surprised had the how little he sounded smirk. As well.
Well, yeah, Troy Baker's doing the voice. And
it sounds really good. Yeah, I didn't even realise it was Troy Baker initially.
No. It sounded enough off the alike. I was glad they didn't just get Harrison Ford to do it and he sounded old and he would, that would get him to do it anyway.
They did that with in From Russia with Love on the PS2 game where it was like, I don't know, 40 years afterwards and he just sounded tired.
No, it was close enough. It had the like sort of sarcastic, charmy edge to it. The voice, I think from the small sample we've heard, I feel like Troy Baker's doing a good job with that. But yeah, I can't wait for this game.
When do you think it's going to come out? Because we don't actually have like a month or a season or anything. It just says 2024.
It's going to be as late in this year as possible, isn't it?
I don't
like,
want it to.
They
be
haven't
that
dated it yet. It's going to be like November or something. Like they've got. Xbox dated a few things. We've got Hellblade, which we'll speak about in a moment, which is May. Avowed, they said fall, I think, or late. I can't remember
fall,
what that was.
Think,
So maybe that's like September, October, and then maybe Indie is like a November. Like, they clearly didn't, like, I want it to come out this year. I want to play this game as soon as possible, but I don't think many people would be surprised if it maybe slipped too early next year. But then again, if GTA rumoured to be early next year or spring next year, everyone wants to get out ahead of that, right?
You don't
want to
be definitely.
Yeah.
Like, when that releases in the months afterwards, you don't release a game because everyone's going to be buying GTA.
I think more importantly, especially for viewers of this podcast as well, near the end of the trailer that they released for The Great Circle, there's an NPC that Indy sort of frightens that looks surprisingly like Joe Scrabble's.
Does look it has the same attached,
really
doesn't it?
I
very interesting.
That,
is that why you went over to Xbox
now.
To be think, to be in this game? Is that the long game?
It's the mustache.
We haven't even talked about the whip. The whip looked good.
It looked
really
cool.
You can use it to distract. You can use it to solve puzzles, to actually hit people. I like the sort of, it looks like they're taking that Wolfenstein almost sandbox approach to levels, and like you can play it stealthy, you can play it loud if you want. I like that. I just like everything I'm seeing about this, to be honest.
I do sort of want to know how much of a balance there's going to be between, because you know machine games can, you know, slap out an FPS that's fantastic in terms of, you know, how
shooting
feels.
I mean, they take
feels.
Their time and, you know, I don't know if they slap them out. But
no, but like, they know how to do it right. And like, we saw Indy holding a revolver for just like a few frames and stuff. But I do wonder if it's going to be a system where you're never really carrying a gun with you. Maybe you'll take like an MP40.
I think he'll have his revolver. Like he always like has one.
I do wonder if it's just going to be sort of limited ammo throughout and you really only want to use it.
I think
it
you'll be
emergencies.
Like, maybe taking them off of enemies and stuff like that. And there'll be moments like we saw in like the fighter plane where you'll maybe take the turret seat and unleash and stuff like that.
I want the gore from Wolfenstein. It'll be jokes to see Indy blasting Nazis.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what we need. I think, but
someone will mod it in.
Have you seen Indiana Jones? You know what the sort of tone is they're going for.
Yeah, I just want it to be. I want it to be the dark Indy.
Look, as long as there's a puzzle where I can like adjust the sun's rays to reveal something, I'm gonna be happy.
That'd be cool. I want some melty faces as well.
Yeah,
I think you've got to do
the
that.
Gore. That's what
that villain looks
there
like.
There you go, Jesse.
that villain looks like he has a good face for melting, to be honest.
He does look very shiny.
Yeah, he could melt. Maybe that's just Sarah in the sun. Anyway, Indiana Jones in the Great Circle looks fantastic. I cannot wait to play that. Hellblade 2, another game that was shown off last night.
Mm.
One that, until this point, it was on my radar, but I can't say I was excited for. And then I think what they showed last night looked just stunning. Like, visually absolutely incredible. Like, I don't know if I've seen many games that can match up to that. I'm not invested in Senua or Hellblade, and I played like half of the first game and it just wasn't clicking for me. I wasn't getting on with it. I'm going to go revisit it, I think, because I want to be excited for this one a lot. But did either of you play the first Hellblade?
I played, same as you, about half of it, and it wasn't really doing much for me. I just didn't find it entirely, not that, you know, it's meant to be a laugh throughout, but I just didn't find it particularly
entertaining.
No,
I think it's an opposite of the laugh. Yeah,
exactly. But honestly, I feel like I'm going to treat Hellblade 2 as a sort of God of War situation where I still haven't finished, you know, the 2018 reboot of God of War. But
really?
I got halfway through that and I was just like, it wasn't really doing anything for me. But then when I went on to the next God of War, it just felt a bit more like something I'd want to play.
So you played half of 2018 and all of Ragnarok?
Yeah. I've mentioned this in prior podcasts. Okay. I just feel like Ragnarok had
my
faster and more visceral gameplay that I wanted. And I feel like with Senua's Saga's Hellblade 2, it's not that it's going to have similar gameplay, but I just feel like it's going to be the one that I'll probably enjoy and spend time in compared to having to go back to the first one.
Yeah. I do just love Ninja Theory's commitment. Like, they said it so many times, just like, we want to make life-changing art through like, what was it? Oh, I'm saying like, I said I love the quote and I can't remember half of it. That's good, isn't it?
Great.
But like, they do, like, they feel like a studio that, you know, although it may sound pretentious, you know, they want to make art above all else. Like, they are making games, but they kind of want to make something that no one else is doing, right? And
yeah,
just the behind the scenes they showed of like how they shoot it, how they like the music, just like it. I want to really love it. And that's why I want to revisit the first to see if I can get into this series, because I feel like I should be big into it. But yeah, I don't know. Emmett, have you not played the first Hellblade?
No, I haven't. But after seeing like the little peek we got at 2 yesterday, I am like sort of thinking like, should I play through the first one first? Mm-hmm. Also, I think the fact that the first one is short, right? It's like 8 or 9 hours.
I think they're both
going to
be quite short, yeah.
That is like a massive plus for me. Like right now, I don't have a lot of time.
Absolutely.
So short games, I'm like, yep. If it's like, you know, 10 to 12 hours, even if it's under that, go for it.
Yeah, I think the first one you could do in about 6. Maybe I'm wrong. Which is, you know, I only got halfway through. I should really finish it. I'm going to start it again though.
But yeah. Like that's something you can do in a weekend. And it's like quite manageable. I like the sound of that. Yeah. I think, like you said, it looks really beautiful. It looks like so nice. Like the landscapes and stuff that they showed are really nice, and just the bits of the game that we actually got to see look really cool. So yeah, I'm more excited for it now after seeing that yesterday than I was before. I wasn't really too bothered about it before, but yeah, it's definitely on my radar now.
Lovely, lovely stuff. Avowed. This is still one I'm unsure of. Like, I will, like, the last time they showed it, I think it was at their summer show. I was like, this isn't quite what I thought this game would be. It was a bit like, I thought it was going to be a bit more like Hexen-like when they first originally showed it, a bit more very action-focused, like really cool spell-slinging. Then last summer they showed, and it was a bit like, oh, this is kind of like fantasy Outer Worlds. It's kind of like, you know, not to do it down, it's kind of like B-tier Elder Scrolls. Then they showed it yesterday, and I was like, okay, I'm kind of back in a bit more. It's a lot more colourful than I thought. It seems to have an actual sense of character to the world. Hard to tell if the writing's great from what we saw, but Obsidian have a good track record of good writing in their games and good actual RPG building where choices matter. If you've played New Vegas, you'll know all about that, for example.
Amazing game. When are we getting a second one of those?
Oh, who knows? But then, I don't know, the combat wasn't doing a lot for me. It looked a little stiff. Yeah. I'm just not a great fan of first-person melee combat too much. Mm. And the spell slinging looked okay, but like, I don't know. I thought it was a weird demo to show off. At points, I was like, oh, this looks cool. But then the other time, I was like, following on from Baldur's Gate, doing a fantasy RPG right now is going to be hard for anyone. And yeah, I'm not entirely sold on Avowed yet.
I think if you told me, without any sort of context, that like this is the next Elder Scrolls after seeing what Starfield was like, I'd be like, yeah, fair enough. Because I sort of got that vibe, and I think, like you said, after you know finishing Baldur's Gate 3, which was an entirely magical experience and unlike any RPG I've played before, and then you know going and in seeing something like this, I know completely different types of games, but it just sort of looks like and. Like just a Bethesda action RPG, and just I wouldn't say I'm over these now, because you know the writing could all be exactly what you need for a game like this, but gameplay wise it just sort of looks a bit like Skyrim, and like I think I'm over it, to be honest, now. Like nothing really felt impactful despite how they were describing the combat.
Yeah, I felt like a lot of it's going to come down to the characters in this game and who you meet, and like doesn't seem like there's a sort of party system. I don't know if there's going to be companions or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know, that like side quest they showed where you were talking to this man and he was just like, oh, what did this guy say to you? It was very, you know, it seemed quite stilted. But
it was, yeah. And then they were just like, so they showed one option, right? And then they were like, oh, you could do this other option, and you don't see what happens with that. They just kind of said like, yep, that can happen too.
Yeah, I'm not sure like if they're going to be fact, like we need to know more about this game, I think, before judging it. But like I was a little more hopeful than we last saw it, but I'm still not like, this isn't a must play for me. Like, this is one, like, if it comes out and everyone's raving that, oh, this is Obsidian at the top of their game, I'll give it a go. But
yeah,
I don't know, like, I mean, it's isn't my favourite setting anyway. So, like, it has to be something special to hook me into a new fantasy sort of world, I think. And I don't know. Who knows?
I think it was a lot of, like, we saw a lot of the same sort of gameplay as well. So it was, like, same location, a lot of beaten up lizards, lizard-looking enemies.
Some interesting lizards.
Some with helmets, some without. I think the spell casting is cool. I like the fact that you can have like dual wands. I definitely want to try that. Or like wand and like a sword or something. Some of the things you can do with those look interesting. And I imagine there's a lot of like make your own fun and like combos with that. And some of the areas that we got like a tiny glimpse of when they were going over like some of the landscapes look cool in the world. But like you said, I think we need to see like a little bit more of it. Like, I'm interested enough where I'd want to see, you know, more gameplay as we go through the year. And I'm definitely going to like keep an eye on it, but I'm not 100% sold just yet.
I don't know what it's offering me at the moment that I can't get elsewhere. Like, if I want a really good choice-based fantasy RPG, I'm going to go with Baldur's Gate. If I want something with mad creatures and a lot of mad spells, I'm going to play Dragon's Dogma 2 this year, I think. So, like, I'm yet to be told what is Avowed giving me that I can't find elsewhere at the moment. And maybe that will be in its writing and its characters that will carry it through. But
just
we'll
cute
see.
Little lizards right now.
Yeah, I mean, are there any lizards in Baldur's Gate? I can't remember. There must be some sort of lizardy thing. It's a great question to put out there, though, isn't it? I mean, it's everyone's favourite lizard, IGN_UK
IGN.com.
I don't think we're going to talk about Aura. I don't know, unless you guys really want to talk about Aura, the Civ-like game. There was a time when I used to give Civ games a go, but like I was watching all of this and it was kind of, I was just thinking in my head, this is far too complicated for me to learn past the age of 30. I'm just like, I've not got the brain capacity to learn these systems. And it did just, you know, a bad thing. These are people that worked on Civ. It did just look like Civ to me. It is Civ, isn't it?
I mean, they compared it to Civ. Like they, you know, so the comparison is valid and it looks like Civ. And if it's a slightly different take on Civ, then I guess those fans will appreciate it. I feel like I've said Civ enough times now.
Yeah. Say Civilization. Why not?
Civilization.
There we go. Expand it out. Yeah.
If you say it too much, sounds weird.
Yeah.
It's not a word anymore.
If you say Civ three times in a mirror, then Aristotle pops up in your house and has a go at you.
Wicked.
Yeah. And they also showed off the new Mana game. I have no connection to the Mana series of games, but, you know, it's always cool to see Japanese devs pop up on a Microsoft stream because traditionally it's not been the place to play new Japanese games. So they're increasing that, especially with their Persona connection as well.
It did almost feel like a joke, though, when they started showing all the logos of the different like game titles, because I was like, I did not realize how expansive this series has been.
I mean, there's not been
a new
one. Is it almost 20 years since the last one, I think?
Yeah.
But there were so many in the past, but it's never been a series I've really been interested in. And it looked fun enough. It looked a bit like Ni No Kuni, which I like. And, you know, but yeah, I unless there's too many games for me to get into that one right now, I think. But I thought it was a good show, though. I liked the presentation, was very slick. I like some beautiful shots. The lenses they must have had on some of those cameras, lovely depth of field in those offices. That's why I genuinely spent half of that stream going, that is a lovely shot. So whoever shot that, well done. Cinematographer on the Xbox Developer Direct, well done to you. It kind of made me nervous, because if I have to visit any of these studios in the upcoming months, I'm going to be like, how do I get a shot like that in
and
this office?
I would say the I think the game director or the franchise creator's leather jacket or just overall outfit looked pretty sick.
Oh, that was great. Yeah,
that was for really cool.
That was a great look. Yeah, there were some great looks on display. Well done to everyone involved. I had a great time. Indiana Jones, obviously the highlight, but who knows when we'll play it. Hopefully this year. They said it's this year. I'm not calling them liars. But I hope it is this year.
Don't
jinx
I want it to be.
I really want it to be this year.
I want it to be.
I need to smash Nazis.
Well, there's plenty of games where you can do that already. If you, you know, get Wolfenstein back out. Everyone, if you haven't played the last couple of Wolfenstein games, I'm not including Youngblood. I'm talking about New Colossus and New Order. Is it New Order? I've completely forgotten the name. Both fantastic, incredible stories as well. Not just a lot of gore. But there is a lot of gore if you like that too. PlayStation also have a game coming out in a couple of weeks.
Why did you get closer to the microphone for that and whisper?
I wanted to look into your eyes when I said the word Foam Stars.
Fair enough.
Foam Stars is dropping on PlayStation Plus in a couple of weeks. So if you have PlayStation Plus for the whole month of February, you can download it for free, I believe, from the 5th or the 6th. I can't remember. A game I think we've briefly spoken about before, and I think everyone who's seen anything of Foam Stars just goes, all right, this is Splatoon, which to an extent it kind of is. There is a lot of Splatoon in this game. It's 4v4 multiplayer modes where you're, instead of covering the floor with paint, you're covering the floor with foam, and you can surf along that foam. And if it's your foam on the coloured foam on the floor, you'll surf along it easier. If it's the other team's foam on the floor, you're going to wade through it like it's like toffee. So you're not going to be able to get through it very easily.
Toffee foam, delicious.
Exactly. But I played a good 4 hours of this game at a preview event. I genuinely was having fun all the way until the end. It is a very fun multiplayer shooter. And I think the bits that kind of appealed to me were that it is actually a bit more of a hero shooter than I thought it was. It has very loose, like Overwatch sort of elements to it. Like there's 8 characters at launch and they actually have their own weapons, they have 2 abilities and like an ultimate superstar ability each as well that they can unleash. So for example, I think my favorite character in the preview was a lad called Egito, who he's kind of a stealthy quick character who can, he has a shotgun, so you have to get up close to it for him to be useful, but he has an ability where you can dive under the foam like a shark and like zoom in behind people and burst out behind them and then use the shotgun to get them. His ultimate ability is a giant homing shark that explodes when it reaches an enemy. That one's very useful. There's just a lot of character to this game and a lot of colour and charm. And when so many like shooters at the moment are military based and just like brown and grey, like I think the finals help. This has a nice splash of colour to it. This also has a nice like bit of colour to it. It's just a good, it's shaping up to be a good like family friendly shooter, which I don't know, PlayStation don't really have at the moment. Like the Splatoon comparisons are valid, but like that is only on Nintendo, right? You can only play that if you have a Switch. Like if you're on PlayStation, there's nothing like that to really play. So this is, I found it really fun. The mode I enjoyed most was called Rubber Duck Party, which is basically like a bit like the push mode from Overwatch, where there's like a central payload that you have to push to either the other team's end or stop it reaching your end. Or I believe like Tower in Splatoon is a similar mode. I like that because I like objective-based modes as opposed to like deathmatches most of the time. So, and that nice little quirk is this giant rubber duck in the middle of the map, which you're moving as the payload. He's also a DJ, so he's playing the music. Now, if you get on top of his head once you've captured him and hold in circle for like, I don't know, felt like 7-8 seconds while your team protects you, you dance on the duck. And then once you've finished dancing, he'll zoom along like 10 or 20% towards the other team. So, you know, there's a good bit of objective team play to be played here. I genuinely had quite a lot of fun. Whether it's going to stand the test of time is another question, because like the PlayStation Plus gamble is one that games have taken before. Like Rocket League famously became one of the biggest games in the world.
Yeah.
Launcher free. Fall Guys, very successful. But then you've got games like Destruction All-Stars, which launched and is a similar sort of vibe and kind of died very quickly. Like,
I can't
it's
even
a risk.
Remember what type of game that is, despite playing it for a couple minutes.
It's so it's a like it's a car smashing game. It's got like a little bit of Burnout and a little bit of like a little bit of Overwatch, I suppose. Like it's a destruction derby game, essentially, which I reviewed and then completely forgot about. But that was okay. Like that was fun. I think it gave it like a 6. It was fine. I had some fun with it, but like, yeah, within months that was like gone. So like, it's a risk, and I don't know. I think Foam Stars is fun. Whether it's gonna thrive is another question.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know. Maybe we should play a game of Foam Stars in a couple of weeks when it launches. It's absolutely, it's one of those that like I put up some gameplay. If you're just trying to watch it, it looks manic. Like you can't tell what's going on. Like when you're playing it, you can. But like when you're watching it, you're like, what is going on? In that sense, it kind of reminds me of Overwatch a bit. Like when you're watching like people play Overwatch, sometimes you're just like, what is going on? There's just colours all over the screen. Like I don't know what they're trying to do. But yeah. It's very fun to play. I would recommend everyone give Foam Stars a go. But yeah, in a few weeks.
It looks cool. I might check it out. I like Splatoon. I don't play it as much now, but I played like 2 when it came out quite a bit. And I just like the regular like turf war mode in that. It's a lot of fun where you just cover the whole map in like your paint. Yeah, this looks cool. Like you said, I watched your gameplay and it was really hard to follow what was going on because
I'm just too quick. I'm just too good. That's
the
problem.
It's just stuff everywhere. Yeah, but like you said, it's like similar when I was watching Overwatch when like, you know, they have like esports events and stuff. Yeah. That was so hard to follow. But I really enjoyed Overwatch. Super fun game. And I think something that like fast pace as well, you're going to get into it, aren't you?
Like, I don't think this has anywhere near the depth or nuance as a game like Overwatch does, but it reminded me of it. There were times when matches got really down to the wire and I was like, it reminded me of that thrill of like when an Overwatch game got really like close down to
overtime,
the wire.
Overtime,
that sort of thing going on.
It's sort of comforting to hear, really, just because like I haven't sort of delved into a new sort of, you know, arena shooter kind of game just in ages, and I've never really, you know, never played Splatoon, never really had a good time with Overwatch and stuff just because I didn't give it too much attention. So being able to dive into something that isn't like super technical and is coming out soon, so it's sort of like a level playing field, like I'm definitely going to check out.
Yeah, and there's going to be, yeah, I think it'll be fun. It's like 80% Splatoon with a little bit of Overwatch sprinkled in, I think.
So, yeah.
Foam Stars, maybe give it a go in a few weeks. Let's change the tone. You were looking forward to how I was going to do this segue.
I was wondering how you were going to segue into this.
There's no natural way. I was going to feel like, you know, that Foam Stars is all about, you know, keeping a zone of the map to you. But I wasn't going to make a segue.
There's no point doing anything like that.
No, there isn't. A new film from Jonathan Glazer, Zone of Interest, comes out, I believe, the 2nd of February in the UK. It's been out elsewhere in the world for a while, I think, a month or so. So if you don't know who Jonathan Glazer is, he's an incredible film director who's only made a handful of films over the course of a couple of decades. If you've seen Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson, the sci-fi horror, it's phenomenal. If you've seen Sexy Beast starring Ray Winston and memorably Ben Kingsley in one of the maddest film roles you'll ever see, then you'll also know it's incredible. But The Zone of Interest is a very different sort of film. It is essentially a family drama about a family who are trying to live the perfect family life, trying to balance work-life balance. Balance work-life balance? Is that a good sentence? Trying to keep their garden in order, trying to keep the family, the kids happy. But the twist is that the husband of this family happens to be the commander of Auschwitz. And they live next to Auschwitz during the height of the Second World War. Literally, the back of their garden is the wall backing on to Auschwitz. It is an incredible film. It is obviously a tough watch at times, but I feel like it's one of those films that leaves you numb at the end, right? And it's me and Jesse, we both saw this together, and it's the way it approaches the subject matter of never showing you the horror. It's all about sometimes you'll hear it and sometimes there'll be references to it. Like, for example, the wife of this family, played by Sandra Hüller, who is also incredible in Anatomy of a Fall, if anyone has seen that, is she'll be trying on a new fur coat. And without them explicitly saying where that coat comes from, you know where that coat has come from if you know what happened at Auschwitz. And it's all about the banality of horror. It's all about how evil can just take place in our world and just, you know, basically try and be swept under the rug by some people. And it reminded me a lot of, I mentioned this documentary a few months ago, I think The Act of Killing. I don't know if either of you have seen it, about the Indonesian genocide in the 60s. There's a very stark comparison to that film near the end of it, I think, as well, which if you've seen both of these films, you'll know what I'm talking about. But about basically how people, yeah, just how normal, seemingly everyday normal people can commit the worst atrocities. And I think it's a phenomenal film. I think it's incredibly well done. It's a hard one to say you enjoyed. It's not a film, it's by no means entertaining. But I also want to shout out the score by Mika Levy. Their score is just unbelievable. It's used so sparingly in this film, but it's a drama. It's only an hour and a half, this film, and it's mostly just a family drama.
The score is haunting, to be fair.
Yeah, you're just kind of observing the banality of evil, basically. And the score is just so incredibly well done. It's like it's basically a horror score. You can tell they also did the score for Under the Skin. And the film Jackie, I don't know if anyone saw it, is also very good. But the score for this film is unbelievable. And it's an incredible film, and it's kind of hard to put into words why, but it's a film I'd urge everyone to see.
Yeah.
Because 100%. It's an important thing to see. What do you think about it, Jesse?
I think it was really, really tough to watch, actually. And I feel like this is what happens as you get older, your emotions open up a bit more when you're watching films and stuff. And I think a little bit of context, I suppose. My nan was born in 1938. So when she was around 7 or 8 years old, it would have been 1945. And I remember her telling me stories of when she was growing up in Spain about how, you know, how General Franco, who was, you know, a fascist thrown through, pretty much basically treated the Spanish population, and what my nan's father went through as a policeman through that time. And hearing all those stories coupled with a time when I was in secondary school where we had someone, a survivor of a concentration camp for World War II. I think they were from the Holocaust Educational Trust. They came into our secondary school, told us a story of what they went through.
Stick with you, don't they?
And like all of those stories, as horrifying and as tremendously inhuman as they are, stick with you. And then when you're watching this film, it's almost nightmarish how mundane the portrayal of the Nazis are, because it's, as you were describing it, you know, before you revealed that it is about, you know, Rudolf Hulse, which was, you know, an SS commandant of Auschwitz. Before you get to that, it's just a family drama. And you know, a lot of films, whether you're watching Indiana Jones or Schindler's List or anything like that, you know, the Nazis are portrayed as this sort of, you know, as they are, this terrifying superpower that are entirely villainous and stuff. That's how they've always been portrayed, as they should. And to watch this film where it's a stark contrast of that, where it is just such boring things sometimes that they're talking about, you know, just like, oh, like here's a new dress I got and I'd like it to be sized differently and stuff like that. And oh, this is the meal we're having. And oh, look, aren't the flowers beautiful in the garden? But then you might see and hear like the smoke of a train going by in the background in one scene, or gunshots or screams in others. It was incredibly powerful.
It's captivating. And it is also like, it sounds weird to use beautifully, but it is like beautifully shot as well. It looks like, I was going to say, it looks great. Like, you know, it's shot very well. It's sometimes hard to put into words. I feel like I was reading a bit about, and I was reading some other like criticism of the film, like positive criticism of the film, and saying how like smart it is that basically this film is all about how the Nazis, and just after the war as well, basically tried to clean up after all of these crimes, and basically as they were going clean up essentially what the horrors they were committing. And there's very stark images towards the end of the film where I think Jonathan Glazer is basically saying, no, you don't get to clean this up. We're putting this on display for everyone to see. Like,
yeah, and that was really tough to watch.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal film. Like, we were lucky enough to see it at Dolby with their sound system and their incredible screen. Like, if you can see this film in the cinema, I feel like it warrants from being in a quiet, dark room and just absorbing it. Like, I can't. It's not a film to watch at home, like second screening, bejeweled on your phone. Like, you gotta like commit to it. It's only an hour and a half. It's phenomenal.
It's almost like a museum piece in some ways. Just, you know, you're there to sort of sit through the experience and just absorb it.
Yeah, exactly. The Zone of Interest. Go see it if you can. It's a fantastic film. So yeah. Another fantastic film is The Holdovers, which is a very different vibe, a very heartwarming film, kind of the opposite of what The Zone of Interest is, really. A film that also came out in America, I feel like 2 months ago now, is like a Christmas film, and one of those films I think I'll put on like every other Christmas because it's like a heartwarming Christmas film.
Mm.
We're getting it, I think, today, the middle of January. What's the point?
I hate that so
what
much.
Is going on?
Yeah.
But how good this film is as well. Crazy.
I really enjoyed this film. I didn't, if you don't know what Holdovers is, it is starring Paul Giamatti, who is a teacher at a private boys school in America in the 70s or 80s. I want to say
70s.
And it's all about these kids. It's a boarding school, and they're all very rich kids who are sent to this private boarding school. And every Christmas, they all go home, right, for their families, or go on holiday to expensive places. But there's sometimes some kids that, for some reason, can't go home. And it's normally, maybe it's because they're family problems. But there's this one kid who's, I think, is it Dominic Sessa who plays him? The first time he's ever been in a film, he's unbelievable. Unbelievable in this film. His family, basically, his mum and stepdad just go, oh, we're going on our honeymoon, so you're staying at school for Christmas, basically. So he's left with Paul Giamatti, this teacher who's tasked with staying with these kids. He's basically being punished. And is she the cook?
Yeah.
I suppose she is the
cook.
Yeah,
she is.
Played by Davine...
Joy Randolph.
Davine Joy Randolph. I'm tripping over all my tongue won't get words out at the moment. And this is just a lovely, heartwarming, funny, but also... touching
it's
drama
bittersweet as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about, right, find, you know, the sentimental touch of finding similarities in different human beings that are completely different backgrounds to you and have completely different life experiences, and finding out you might all have shared problems you can overcome together. And yeah, it's a heartwarming Christmas film that is funny. It reminds me a lot of, have you seen Dead Poets Society?
No.
The film starring Robin Williams, which is a similar thing of like a private boys school, and he's the teacher of the school who's kind of like connects with the boys.
Okay.
That film, I love that film. That film will make me cry at the end. I'd recommend that film. Robin Williams is incredible. And it's kind of part of the series, like Good Will Hunting, of Robin Williams looking after young men and kind of teaching them about life. I prefer Good Will Hunting and Dead Poets Society a little bit more to The Holdovers. They affect me a little bit more. The Holdovers, I thought, is very fun, very funny at points. I thought it was at times trying slightly too hard to make me cry, and I was like, it's not quite happening. You're not quite getting there for me.
Yeah.
Whereas Dead Poets Society does it naturally for me. But yeah, I know both of you have seen this and really liked it too, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry, go on, Jesse.
Oh no, I was just going to say, like, I don't think I've actually seen like a Paul Giamatti film before.
Oh,
like, I can't
he's
really
such a good actor.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing, like I said, I hadn't really seen him before, and I was just surprised. Just
watch Shoot 'Em Up, where he plays an absolutely mad villain against Clive Owens.
I have heard about that film, actually.
Yeah,
but it was just sort of a unique take to see an actor, I guess, like himself in a leading role that I didn't have much experience with, and just seeing how much sort of sad charisma he exudes and just how funny he is. Because he sort of plays a half pathetic man in this film, and it sort of grows on you as you go throughout. But it just felt very authentic throughout the film.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think, like, to begin with, I wasn't keen on the student or the teacher. I was like, I don't know whether you're supposed to like not like them. I definitely didn't like them to begin with. I think definitely with with Paul Giamatti, like his character, you're supposed to kind of be like, oh, like this guy, he's taking everything. a little bit too seriously. He's a bit like too much like by the book.
It's a bit of a beg.
And yeah, he's sort of, I think he mellows definitely. Like you see, as these characters come together over the course of the film, they kind of teach each other how to, you know, get on in life and get on with other people. You know, they're all sort of forced together. They don't really want to spend this Christmas period together, but they have to. And yeah, I think he's way more likable by the end. I think he's more human than he necessarily was. He's a bit like robotic to begin with, but that is like 100% what his character is supposed to be as this teacher. And yeah, I think like it is very sad as well at points. Like, I didn't cry, but to be fair, I don't really cry at movies that often. But yeah, it was like, you know, I think I watch a lot of Christmas films during the Christmas period usually, and a lot of them are very like sort of boilerplate, like happy families coming together, maybe some kind of problem, but it all works out in the end. And this kind of takes like a very different approach to Christmas, which is nice.
Yeah, I liked it. It's very heartwarming. It's a good family film as well. It's one I'll watch this Christmas with the family. But if they'd released it pre-Christmas, maybe I'd watched it last Christmas with the family. It's still maddening to me that you release a Christmas film a month after Christmas. But yeah, that's out in UK cinemas, I believe, today. So yeah, I'd highly recommend The Holdovers. Looks like it could win some awards. Not that I entirely care about award shows, but looks like it's between Paul Giamatti and Cillian Murphy for the Best Actor Oscar. So I want Cillian Murphy to win, but I wouldn't be disappointed if Paul Giamatti won. But
yeah,
Davina Jo Randolph swept every single award for her performance, which is understandable. She's very good. She's kind of heartbreaking at times in that film. So yeah, very good film, The Holdovers. Check it out. That's what I say.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Do you know what we're going to check out now is your feedback, IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. What's the first email, Jesse?
This feedback is from Francis, and they say, "Hi all, happy new year." This feels like the last week to say this.
To be fair, I feel that this email came in about a week and a half ago, so
right, okay,
we'll let Francis off there.
I was going to say, but they're gone. Say, "I hope you all had a lovely Christmas and that the new year ahead brings good tidings to you all." Thank you, Francis. What I am most looking forward to in 2024, aside from the things we don't know about or are heavily rumored, would be the anime film for The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim, which was meant to be out in spring, but due to the strikes, won't be out until December of this year. As a massive Lord of the Rings fan, I'm craving for more content set in Middle-earth. And while Rings of Power Season 2 is expected to be out sometime this year, I completely forgot about that. The first season left a lot to be desired, and it should be a lot better than it is, especially considering the amount of money they have spent. I agree. The anime film be set roughly 200 years before The Lord of the Rings and focuses on Helm Hammerhand, voiced by Brian Cox, yes, with Miranda Otto, who played Eowyn, reprising her role and narrating the story. The director of this film directed the early 2000s Ghost in the Shell anime and also directed the Ninth Jedi episode in Star Wars Visions, which was one of the highlights of that series. I'm intrigued by an anime Lord of the Rings film, and I'm just as excited that we are still returning to that world. With the talent attached, I'm expecting this to be a good film, and I'm hopeful this will lead to more good Lord of the Rings content, be it anime, film, games, or otherwise.
Gollum 2. Give us Gollum 2 to play. That's what I'm
going
to say.
Oh, no, thank you.
You're a big Lord of the Rings fan, Jesse. Like, it's been a bit of a drought of good stuff recently, hasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm content with the Lord of the Rings things that I experienced, you know, whether it's the films, the books, or a couple of the games I played as a kid. I feel like I don't really need more Lord of the Rings in my life, like how I felt like I needed more Star Wars before Star Wars became what it is now. But I'm looking forward to this anime just because it is something slightly different. And to have someone who sort of, you know, was in charge of the Ghost in the Shell anime, which was brilliant as well. It looks like it could be good, but also I just don't know yet.
Nah, Brian Cox, getting him as a voice, that's always good. Always works.
I mean, him describing Tekken was
fantastically
that was so
good.
Stupid.
It was so bizarre. Yeah. I want more stuff like that.
I don't know whether Lord of the Rings isn't something which I feel like I want to see go the way of Star Wars and Marvel, where it's just an overabundance of everything. Like,
no.
I just don't need it at this point.
Is this based on anything Tolkien, like, did Tolkien write a story about the Rohirrim, or is this completely people just riffing off of what he wrote? Do we know?
I can't say for sure.
Okay. I'll have a look up on that. I'm trying to imagine Lord of the Rings in anime style. I mean, I suppose I haven't watched any. I'm completely blanking on the anime that is supposedly a bit like Game of Thrones. What's that one called? The one set in like Scandinavia. No.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, neither do I. We need Matt Jones.
No. I'm going to find it. Talk about Lord of the Rings while I find out what this show is.
Well, Jesus Christ. I mean, it just, I don't know. It just, it sort of upset. It doesn't upset me, but it's just like, you know, we had Gollum and we had the recent
Finland saga. There we go. That's a little bit like, that's a little bit fancy, isn't it? It's me talking about anime. Why am I even bothering?
Fantastic.
I know nothing.
I feel like, you know, we had Gollum, we had the Fourth Age, Valheim-esque game that came out recently, and it's just, they're all okay, you know, like, I don't know if I need more Lord of the Rings in my life right now.
Well, there we go. Oh, I didn't know that this was so Brian Cox is playing the character, that's who Helm's Deep is named after. That's pretty cool. If we get to see Helm's Deep being, like, created or something, that would be cool. Might just watch The Two Towers again, though, innit? I mean, sometimes I think about all the new Lord of the Rings stuff, I'm like, might just watch the trilogy again. I was going to watch them all over Christmas, I just didn't have time, didn't do it in the end.
So, I still think it's insane that, if I'm remembering this correctly, they want 10 seasons out of The Rings of Power. Like,
really? Yeah,
there were bits, I feel like it started okay, but by the end of it, I was like, oh no.
I just do not think it's happened. They've got it all mapped out and stuff, but I just can't see that happening.
I mean, I guess that's cool. I think more and more shows are doing that, though, aren't they? Where they're like, we're going to have 10 seasons. And it's like, okay, but you've had one. Or you might have even had zero at the point that you say that as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, chill out, dude.
Mm-hmm. Let's all chill out. Emma, we've got another feedback email.
We have. This is from Will. Will says, hi all. Hope you're having a great month of the year. Sorry, first month of the year. Long time listener. First few time emailer. Okay, cool. Currently rewatching Punisher season 1, and I'm on episode 4 at the end, where, spoilers for a 7-year-old show, Castle embarks on a chase in a newer Ford Mustang against Agent Madani's classic 60s Mustang. Full disclosure, I drive a V8 Mustang every day, and I'm a car person, so maybe this scene does more for me than others, but it's the fifth or so time I've watched this show, and every time without fail, this scene gets me going to the point where I want to jump in my car for a drive. I'm wondering if there's a scene in a show or movie, no matter how many times you see it, it elicits a visceral response in you that is almost undeniable. Respect the sea grave diggers and goddamn John Berthel. All the best, Will in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks, Will.
I tell you, it's a different vibe, but one that gets me going. Last weekend, watched The Godfather Part 1 again, as I'm likely to do. Seen that film a few times. I'm not going to spoil the end of it, but the scene, the big culminating cross-cutting scene near the end of that film involving a baptism. Oh my God, it's the most exciting baptism you'll ever see in your life. I love that gets me going, that few minutes where a certain character is just going, I do and stuff. Oh God.
Does he renounce?
Oh God, he renounces. And there's some cross cutting, there's music, that is just pure, just heart pumping stuff to me. What a baptism. what about you guys?
Go on, Emma.
So mine's more game than a film or a show. But I like to play like Guitar Hero at Christmas because I got Guitar Hero 3 at Christmas when it first came out. And also I play like Rock Band still quite often. Every time I play those games and I get like a really good song, like a nice old hit, it reminds me that I should just play real guitar. So yeah, sometimes like, you know, if you get like, I don't know, like Sweet Child of Mine or Cliffs Was Over or something like that, you know, I just get really excited while I'm playing it in the game, and then I'm like, I should go and play this on guitar, like we have guitars around. And sometimes I do, sometimes I just carry on playing the game.
I got my guitar out over my I said my Guitar Hero guitar out over Christmas. Okay, not right. An actual guitar.
I didn't know you played.
No. Oh, I play guitar in Rock Band there. I had to open it up and like redo some stuff in it to get it working, but it worked in the end. It's like 26 different screws on those things at the back. They're a nightmare to get into. But I did it. And we got there.
Congrats.
And yes, I played for all the Beatles Rock Band because that's what I'll do. Jesus. But I was gutted. I have like, I don't know, 12 different Guitar Hero and Rock Band, like PS3 cases around. And I've had all the games. I don't know where my Guitar Hero 3 disc was, and that's the one I really wanted to play.
No, so yeah, I love that.
That's
game.
My favourite with, so it has Through the Fire and Flames, it has Cliffs of Dover, it just has all the good stuff on it. And I don't know where my disc is. I feel like it's still in a flat in Leeds somewhere where I had it in university. Like, 11, 12 years ago now. Like, I feel like it's back there somewhere, but I still had a great time. Do you see, this week it was they announced the last ever Rock Band 4 DLC this week.
I didn't realize they were still releasing DLC. How old is Rock Band 4?
At least 10 years.
Jesus.
Like 12, 11?
Yeah, dedicated.
When did it come out? Let's see. But yeah, like it's the 12. End of an era.
They're still so fun, but. Yeah, and I forget that after like two songs, that thing where like you look away from the screen and the room just starts moving up because you've been staring at a moving thing. God, I love those games. Jesse, is there a scene that just gets you pumping? Gets you pumping? Jesus. When's the last time you had a good pump?
Can you stop, Cardi?
Tell us about the pump.
It's Lord of the Rings related.
Oh, God. Hey. Pumping at the Rohirrim.
I mean, it is that, to be fair. it's just an exciting fucking scene. And I remember watching that in the cinema as a kid, like The Ride of the Rohirrim, and just thinking, wow, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And every time I've rewatched it, and you know, they did like these fantastic 4K re-releases sometime last year, and just blasting up the sound at 4K and just seeing that entire beautiful cinematic moment in motion. It's just fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's just very exciting.
Is it what gets you pumping is when he says, look to my coming on the first light of the fifth day
at
the dawn of the
fucking child.
Look, you're the one who loves it when Gandalf says, look to my coming on the first light of the fifth day.
You bloody loser.
Helm's Deep's good though, isn't it? It's not really a scene. It's just a full hour and a half of pure,
it's bloody great.
Just incredible stuff.
Look at the frigging GoPro segment that they had in The Hobbit. I'm just like, what happened, man?
I've still never seen any of the Hobbit films. I can't bring myself to, just because I love that book so much.
Yeah, you don't need to.
I can't bring myself to do it. Yeah, let us know. Is there a scene always gets you pumping? IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com. Subject line, pumping. That's pumping. Oh, no. P-U-M-P-I-N apostrophe. Pumping. There we go. I've got an email from Josh who says, hello, UK IGN crew. I was listening to an old episode where Cardi beat Joe in an endless search. After his victory, he went on to deliver a victory speech of sorts. Did I? Doesn't sound like me. To the words of the effect, I've got a great guessing bone. I've always had that in life, that little bit of luck. I do have a good guessing bone, actually. I'm quite good at guessing.
You agree with your past self.
Yeah. It's because now I'm consistent, you know. This reminds me of a story Cardi once told on the podcast about cashing in big after a night at the casino. That did happen. Therefore, I've come to the conclusion the man's right, and he does indeed have a great guessing bone. So I'm hoping to benefit from Cardi's foresight and request he chooses my lottery numbers this weekend. So I've basically been tasked here by Josh to pick six numbers between 1 and 59. And as an incentive, if we bring in the big bucks, he's happy to put the money towards a Red Dead TV show starring Daniel Day-Lewis and directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. We might need more than the National Lottery for that. But
I was going to say, is that easy to do that?
I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, maybe the numbers I'm going to pick. I'm going to do this off the cuff. And when I say off the cuff, I'm going to look at this. This is how I won money on roulette, by the way. I'd pick the numbers of some Spurs players I was particularly enjoying at the time and just roll with them. This is how we're doing it. We're going to go with, we've got to go with seven.
This is a river.
The captain, human son. We've got to go with seven. We're going to go with 10. James Maddison coming back from injury. It's going to be a big boost for the side, so we'll go with that. Number 13, Guglielmo Vicario. Just Venom, his nickname there in goal. Get him in there. So we've got 7, 10, 13. We're going to scoot up a bit. We need some high numbers. 21, Dejan Kulusevski. I love him. A lovely Swedish man. Get him in there. Number 30, Rodrigo Bentancur. Just incredible feat. Glides along the grass. Love him.
Fantastic.
And one more. We'll go higher again. We'll go with number 38, Destiny Udogie. What a young man. What a player. What an engine for the young Italian right back. So just to clarify, these are if anyone wants to buy a ticket this weekend for the UK National Lottery, then winning numbers will be 7, 10, 13, 21, 30, and 38. There we go.
There's going to be at least two people on this planet who use
imagine if that does win like a good amount of money and there's loads of tickets and then there's going to be some sort of conspiracy theory like who worked this out?
They're going to come looking for you.
I better get none of those numbers. How about that?
You know what? I'll give it a go this week and I'll share the results.
Jesse's all in. Do you remember when Darren Brown did that thing with the lottery?
Oh yeah, the bullshit, yeah.
Yeah, maybe you could be the next Darren Brown.
Maybe Simon. I could be. I don't know if it says podcast. I was once at the Globe Theatre on a school trip, and Darren Brown was in the audience, and everyone was just nervous. So like, is he filming something? Like, are we? Is he going to do something to us? Is he going to put us all asleep? But no, he was just watching the play.
So, that's nice.
There we go. There we go. Once more for good luck. 7, 10, 13, 21, 30. And 38. Those are your winning lottery numbers. And whoever winnings, I want a good 20% of everyone's cut there. So yeah, there we go. Thank you very much. IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com. If you've got any requests, if you want to predict maybe a world event that will happen in the next 5 years, maybe we could do that. I don't know.
that's not fun.
I don't know. Something, anything.
World events always sad, man.
Email. World events can be happy, such as, I don't know, the repopulation of an endangered animal.
Fair enough. I wouldn't mind hearing some alternate name titles and descriptions for Indiana Jones games in a similar vein to The Great Circle.
Yeah. I don't know. And
the Miraculous Window. There we go.
That's a Professor Layton title. That's not an Indiana Jones title.
That's true. That's not actually a Professor Layton title.
No,
is it?
But it sounds like it could be. I don't know. And Indiana Jones and the it's not that easy.
Yeah.
It really isn't. I was gonna say, I don't know, and the I don't know. it's very hard. You can't just throw that on the spot of me. But yeah, I was thinking like a Valley of something, but I couldn't think of. I don't know.
And the Valley of Death.
The Valley of Chad. I don't know.
So Chad.
Yeah, Chad Valley. I don't know. Right. I've lost the plot.
Jesus Christ.
We've got to play Indiana Jones music at the end. There's only one choice.
We have to. Yeah.
Week. Yeah, this has been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Jesse and Emma.
Thank you,
Cardi.
Oh, thank you. And everyone have a lovely weekend and win that lottery. Goodbye.
Bye.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that. As well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.